Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hello, everyone. Internet, RotoWorld's Josh Norris here with another episode of the RotoWorld Football Podcast. We got some more reviews. I will read them the next time with Evan Silva. I'm not prepared this time. I'm sadly sorry about that. But at least we do have Evan Silva here. And I thank you all for rating and reviewing, subscribing, doing all that great stuff. I'd heard that there's this little podcast out there called Setting the Edge Podcast. Two guys that are trying to make a name for themselves out there in the football world that are saying that, you know, we need more five-star reviews than Josh Norris. Let's not make that happen. Come on. You can help us out. It takes 20 seconds. Leave one on iTunes, Stitcher, whatever you want to do. It really does help us out, and it kind of keeps the Setting the Edge guys down in their rightful place. But on more important issues, the NFL Combine just happened. And as always, no matter how big of a percentile you think the Combine should matter in the process, it really does matter. And there are plenty of takeaways, and there's no one else to talk about it better with me right now than Evan Silva. Evan, did you leave your desk for those 4 days of the Combine, or once the offensive skill players finished, where did you enjoy your, Sunday and Monday after that?
Before I had a kid, I would have just been plastered to my couch.
Okay.
So I can't live my life like that anymore.
Yeah.
But, I was plastered to my couch as much as I possibly could. I mean, you know.
It's better than just being plastered.
No, it's not.
I guess the right place to start, and I should say this, the way that athletic testing with, in general, with any position, a lot of people call attention to the top athletes and want to bump them up. But in my opinion, just as important as recognizing the top athletes, it's recognizing the non-NFL caliber athletes. Because in many cases, you don't want those on your NFL roster or a NFL roster because many times they don't make it. So I guess the right place to start with that, Evan, is Dalvin Cook. According to Zach Whitman, who does Three Sigma Athlete and these composite scores, most importantly, the Spark scores, he tested in the 9th percentile. That means 91% of NFL running backs entering the league since 1999 are more athletic than Dalvin Cook. We've talked about Dalvin Cook in the past, Evan. Does this change at all your mindset and your evaluation of his game?
I think that it's a puzzle piece, and I think that my takeaways after watching him play is a puzzle piece. And I think that his production at the college level is a puzzle piece. And I think that his off-field red flags and the fact that he had 3 career shoulder surgeries is a puzzle piece. And I think the fact that he had 14 fumbles in college, including 6 last season, are a puzzle piece. And I think that another puzzle piece, when we evaluate him from a fantasy football standpoint, will be where he is actually drafted.
Mm-hmm.
And I still think that he's a good player and that he is likely to be a quality NFL starter. But I think that his draft stock could be negatively impacted. Whereas at one point people were like mocking him, I think in like the top 10 of the draft, the top 10 picks. I don't think that is likely at all. And I think that we could see him slip out of the second round because teams will take a holistic view of Dalvin Cook and not just get tied up, I think, in one piece of the puzzle, because there are many pieces of the puzzle.
Yep.
But I mean, I still think he's a good player, and I still love your comparison to D'Angelo Williams. I think that you made some good points on how he is a little bit straight line-ish, I think. And I think that, like, when I was watching him, I put in my notes that I thought he was one of the first things I put in my notes was that I thought he was a one cut zone running back. And I think that he will still be coveted by teams that have that style of a running game.
How you mentioned it and how you put it with the puzzle pieces, I think is a great way of stating it. A lot of people say, well, the NFL combine is just 10% of my evaluation or 20%. I don't put percentiles on it. It's kind of just a fluid situation an evaluation is, and it's different for every single case. I obviously still love Dalvin Cook's game. I have for 2 years. I will continue to love Dalvin Cook's game. I think it's not impossible to question the type of production that he put up, but no one did it better in 2015 than Dalvin Cook. I mean, he put on the same run that Ezekiel Elliott did in that four-game stretch when Ohio State won the championship, and he did it for the entire season, put the team on his back completely. But you mentioned, and not just from a fantasy perspective, but from a team-building perspective here, are you really going to take a running back who tested in the ninth percentile with the fumbling issues, with the three shoulder surgeries, with whatever else comes up in this interview process, in the first round at a position that has theoretically been devalued? I don't think so. I think that he absolutely does slide out of the first round now, and maybe that's us being reactive, but to me, when you look at it from that whole, with all those pieces intertwined and mixed in, it's not like he is clearly the most talented running back in this class at all. In fact, we're going to get to some of these other names. The other names now, to me, look a lot shinier than he does, and a lot cleaner than he does, because, and Zach pointed this out again, no running back has been selected, I believe, under the 25th percentile in the first round since 1999, at the very least since 1999. Are you going to be the one team, and who knows, Dalvin Cook maybe changes this at his pro day, but are you going to be the one team that does spend a first-round pick on a running back that tests in the ninth percentile of athleticism? Again, love his game, but that's just another question you have to consider.
And I think that we're still in a learning phase, and I think that NFL teams are still very much in a learning phase. I mean, you hear coaches talk about this, like they don't – I mean, they're not paying attention to college players during that – you know, during the football season, like they're worrying about their own teams. A lot of times, you know, the first impressions will be made at the Senior Bowl. The first impressions for a lot of them, you know, for guys that don't go to the Senior Bowl, they will be made at the combine.
Yep.
You know, they're not necessarily, they don't necessarily like have their minds made up entering all these events. You know, they don't have everything figured out right now. And you know, they're learning about Dalvin Cook's medical history and how many times he put the ball on the ground and, you know, whether or not they think he can pass block in the NFL. I mean, it's a learning process, and we are learning, and so are NFL teams.
And people make fun of the term draft stock a lot. And sure, in some situations it's used incorrectly, and it is the media catching up on some evaluations that teams have. But in this case, Evan, I think it's absolutely a real thing because you mentioned it. I mean, in the fall, the area scouts will have their round projections, their evaluations just on his play, and obviously all the information that they gathered throughout the process. And then you mentioned it. I mean, the coaches come in at the Senior Bowl time, and especially right now with all these underclassmen, and then there are cross-check grades. There's all different grades, and there's a final grade put onto it by the GM, by the head coach, whoever the decision makers are, and then he finally goes on the board. It is a fluid process, and as you mentioned, we really are still picking up these vital pieces of information. Who else stood out for you, either positive or negatively, from the combine, from this running back group?
And the scouts who are concerned about the players all year long, they have no power. They have
exactly.
No decision-making power. They just submit a report, you know, to the guys who actually do have power.
Right.
So the
only grade that matters in the end is that one they put up 2 weeks before the draft when they have those final meetings. Like, all this stuff about, hey, this guy's here on this team's board in January or February, it's complete BS. It's rubbish. It really doesn't matter in a lot of situations. And again, it matters in those final meetings in those 2 to 3 weeks before the draft actually happens. So,
I think that Leonard Fournette, what he did at the combine was pretty much exactly what we could have expected after watching him. You know, elite speed score, big body dude with incredible straight line speed, yep. And questions about his overall athleticism. His 28.5-inch vertical was like that of an offensive lineman. He struggled in pass catching drills, which is a question about him, of course, coming out of LSU. You know, I think that he's probably still very likely to be the first running back drafted, and the team that selects him will want to build its offense around him. And so I think that those are those factors bode well for him. But I think that what we saw on tape from Leonard Fournette was very much reflected in his workout.
And we don't have a full workout on him yet because we don't have his three-cone or 20-yard short shuttle, which will come at the LSU Pro Day. We don't have those same numbers for Alvin Kamara. But
hey, let me ask you, how do you think that Leonard Fournette will do, like, in the three cone and the agility drills?
I'd be surprised if it's above average. I think you can expect anything from average to below average. I mean, Leonard Fournette, I think he's a great straight line athlete with insane straight line speed and burst and explosion in that area, and he can create big plays, and I think his ability to pick up 3 to 5 extra yards on final contact or whatever it is one of his strongest assets. I really do think, though, Evan, because for some, the 28.5-inch vertical or the pass catching or whatever, his inability or lack of ability to be great and on shotgun runs could lead. And I think that this is a situation that could pop up, that teams walked in or a general manager walked into his office on Tuesday morning and thought to himself, well, rather than take Dalvin Cook, rather than take Leonard Fournette in the top 20, whatever, why don't we wait until the later part of the first round, trade an extra third-round pick, move up from our second-round pick, and get Christian McCaffrey or even Alvin Kamara later in that first-round area and get that fifth-year option on their name? Because I think that, and again, the NFL loves Alvin Kamara much more than we do, much more than Twitter.com does. In fact, Evan, I wouldn't be surprised if Alvin Kamara is the first running back off the board. And Christian McCaffrey's right there with him, and even better, in my opinion. So, to me, I wouldn't be surprised if they feel that those are the quote-unquote safer options, and you still get that fifth-year option while really just giving up, like, third or a fourth-round pick to move up a few spots from your second rounder.
Yeah, I think that McCaffrey was a winner in Indy. He measured in a little bit heavier than his college listings. And he just crushed everything that he did in terms of his workouts. He had the best three-cone time, which is a very predictive metric for running backs, ran 4.48. You know, I'm still skeptical that he will be like a true NFL workhorse, but I also think that the team that drafts him should not anticipate and probably will not anticipate using him in a role like that. He should be a guy who I think gets like 11 to 12 carries per game, four to six catches per game, and is a really good pass blocker and should not come off the field on passing downs.
The more I watch him, Evan, the more I think he can hold up between the tackles, like really as a true first priority runner for a team, because that's like all he did at Stanford, and then he shined when he was allowed to go a little bit outside of that. But I mean, you watch that offense at Stanford, he was able to run between the tackles, multiple tight ends, multiple fullbacks, and use that vision and patience. But again, the frame doesn't necessarily equate that. I'll throw out again, Zach has him as a 70th percentile athlete with his composite scores. And I want to throw out a few other ones. Wayne Gallman was a 16th percentile. Samaje Perine was a 24th percentile. Jamal Williams out of BYU was even a worse athlete than Dalvin Cook. That Jamal Williams one is an interesting one for me because I keep watching him more and more. I'm not sure if you watched him at BYU yet, Evan. And I like what I saw. But, again, Thomas Rawls succeeded with a poor composite score. But it might be difficult for these other running backs to do the same thing.
Wayne Gallman did not surprise me. The way he tested, that's exactly how he looks when you watch him. atrocious pass blocker. I mean, the worst pass blocking running back in this class that I've seen.
Wow. See, he even picked up a few great ones down the stretch for Clemson to win that game, but that was probably his best stretch in that second half of that game.
We got Joe Mixon today. He crushed it as expected. You know, just no questions whatsoever about his on-field playing ability. Marlon Mack, the dude, he did well in Indy. He was posted top five spark results, according to Zach. Four five flat, 10'5" broad jump. I thought he would do a little bit better than that. But I mean, those are still strong marks. He's clearly an NFL caliber athlete at 5'11".
Yeah. And there's nothing. And there's we should mention there's nothing wrong with average athleticism for an NFL prospect.
I mean, he's not average.
Right? No. Well, he's at 62%, right? Yeah. And that's guessing based on. What his he didn't do the short shuttle or three cone either, but so when we mention someone who's an average NFL athlete or NFL prospect in terms of athleticism, again, there's nothing wrong with that. Like, it's not like 50% on a test. It's really he just is the average. So continue. Sorry for interrupting.
Jeremy McNichols out of Boise State. He was a combine winner, number six spark score among running backs, 5'9", 214. I mean, that's feature back size. His best attribute coming in, we knew, was his passing game ability. 88 catches over his final two seasons at Boise State. And Pro Football Focus College charted him with one sack allowed over his final 237 pass-blocking snaps at Boise. So,
have you watched him yet?
I have not.
Yeah.
But I
didn't love what I saw. Like you said, receiving ability is his best trait. I think he's a former high school wide receiver. And some colleges even recruited him as a receiver, but he's like not a natural runner at all. In terms of there are times when if he puts his head down, he can pick up 2 to 3 yards, and instead he just wants he acts like it's high school and wants to break to the sideline. Like there's this one game, can't remember who it was against. He did that on 3 or 4 occasions, which you like never see at the NFL level because NFL backs just don't do that. But I agree. I think his receiving ability is interesting.
Yeah, I mean, but he's probably, I mean, just from paper scouting him, you know, he's scouting. I shouldn't even use that term. But just looking at him on paper, his measurables and his production and the way that he produced, I would probably project him as a passing game running back. But I'm going to watch him and see what I think about him. Kareem Hunt, really disappointing. Aaron Jones, UTEP, he's another guy that I have not watched yet, but he looks really good on paper, and I'm excited to watch him. James Conner, I think, based on his profile, did about as you might expect. But he's also a guy that he's coming back from Hodgkin lymphoma.
Yep.
And you don't know, as he comes back, is he going to regain athleticism?
It's even one of those where he was, I believe, and I was told this, that there were times when he would go through treatment in the morning and then go to practice like shortly after that, which is absolutely nuts. He's a powerful runner. And I mean, I keep connecting the dots here, but like if the Patriots lose LeGarrette Blount and they need a short yardage back and they don't want to invest a lot at the position, then a third day pick on James Conner, 4th through 7th round, is likely his projection. To me, that makes sense. And then we're still waiting on Dante Foreman's athleticism as well. You're cool to move on to the wide receivers, Evan?
Yeah, I did want to say that I think that this running back class is not as good as it was hyped to be.
I agree. Okay. Just athletic-wise. I mean, these runners, some of them are still absolutely going to be productive, and some that we didn't even mention because that just is it happens. It's opportunity and talent that we miss, right? But I agree that – I mean, guys like Dalvin Cook, who blew up college football, testing in the 9th percentile, once again, it's concerning, no matter how you look at it. I'll tell you what wasn't concerning, Evan. Zay Jones, 94th percentile. Chris Godwin, 89th percentile. Taywan Taylor, 81st percentile in terms of spark scores. Three of my guys, three who I absolutely loved. And so it was really, really nice for that to align in my eyes. What about you? What about from these wide receivers?
Cooper Kupp is a slot guy, kind of, solidified himself there. That was our initial assessment of him.
There's no way he can play outside. I don't think so.
He didn't play again. He didn't play outside at Eastern Washington.
Right.
And the only time they lined up outside was to catch wide receiver screens.
Yeah.
Juju Smith-Schuster, I know we don't have his agility, but I think that what he did participate in was solid.
Yeah.
He was 6'1", 215. He ran 4.54, 10-foot broad jump, not a great vertical, 32.5 inches. But I don't think he hurt himself based on what he did. John Ross, you know, he blew it up.
And we're still waiting. And it sounds like we won't even get his three-cone short shuttle, but at this point it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter with John Ross.
In regard to the wide receiver class in its entirety, first of all, do you think that Corey Davis and Mike Williams are number one receivers in the NFL?
I think Corey Davis is. I'm not sure about Mike Williams. I mean, he chose not to run at the combine, and I wouldn't be surprised if we see him over a 4.59, and that's kind of hedging it a little bit. 4.65 wouldn't surprise me, honestly, Evan. But I think Corey Davis can be a focal point of NFL passing game, yes.
Okay, so I think that the wide receiver class was overhyped too, even though we had
even though we had a bunch of winners
in Chris Godwin. And I think that Juju Smith-Schuster had a solid combine, and John Ross was a winner. But I think that there's just a lot of, you know, a lot of number two, number three receiver, and maybe only one, maybe two number one wide receivers.
Let's talk about Godwin for a second. And if you guys haven't listened to my podcast with Matt Harmon from a few weeks ago, you really should. I mean, he broke it down incredibly. But Chris Godwin is someone who already has a calling card to his game, an area that he dominates. He's the best contested catch receiver over the last 2 years that Harmon charted. So you add on that factor, right, and he's fantastic along the sidelines, to the fact he's going to be just 21 years old during his rookie year. Also with this athleticism that places him in the 89th percentile, I think at worst you see Chris Godwin go in the second round. And I think you could see him even blossom and grow as his game continues. Because I'm not sure if I saw that type of quickness and explosion out of his game other than in that one area. But, I mean, I do rely on these athletic tests, Evan, because people say the eye in the sky doesn't lie. It does all the time. Like, people misinterpret things all the time. And I think these athletic numbers do a far better job of putting someone's athleticism in a package than my eyes do.
Yeah, again, it's a critical puzzle piece. It has been shown to have predictive value. To ignore it would just be ignorance. I mean,
Think Zay Jones can play outside if we're talking about him versus Cooper Kupp, just based on his athleticism and how he did it more at ECU than than Cooper Kupp did or Curtis Samuel did at Ohio State or that type of stuff.
There have been numerous instances historically where, you know, a guy is super productive and or has great college tape and then goes to the combine and, you know, shows poorly as an athlete, and that ends up being predictive for his career. I mean, Jarvis Jones is the first guy who really pops to mind. And, I mean, there have been numerous – I mean, Laquan Treadwell, I guess you would probably at this point put into that boat, although I'm still holding out some hope for him. I mean, he's a really young guy, and he was coming back from a horrible – leg injury. Yeah. And, you know, that looked like an injury that might, you know, he might need a year or two to truly recover from that. But yeah, I mean, I think that we absolutely need to incorporate this as a puzzle piece.
And there were some guys in that 70th to 50th percentile in terms of spark scores that I really like. Josh Reynolds in the 67th. I think his game aligns very much to a guy like Chris Henry from a few years ago, maybe like a decade ago for the Cincinnati Bengals. As a vertical threat, I still think he's kind of on that Justin Hunter, Marvin Jones spectrum. And if you get that in the third or the fourth round, I think that's awesome. Carlos Henderson, who's fantastic after the catch. His shuttle and three cone were not good, but maybe he's more of a stop-start, explosive movement type, which it works that way. Curtis Samuel, 64th percentile, worked out with the wide receivers and not the running backs. Who knows? He might be drafted as a running back. But I think he is a much more dynamic option, maybe not as safe, but much more dynamic option than a Cooper Kupp in the slot as a receiver. And then Chad Hansen in the 53rd percentile out of Cal, which I know a lot of people really like his game as well.
Tight ends crush it as expected.
Oh my gosh, Evan, did they crush
again,
it?
Again, every single time these guys are put under the microscope, they deliver. Whether it is you're watching them play or they're working out. O.J. Howard was unbelievable. Same 40 time as Leonard Fournette at 5 inches taller and 11 pounds heavier. The best three-cone time among all tight ends in Indy. Yeah, I think he's a top 10 pick, potentially, in that actual NFL draft. And, I mean, I'm still learning about all the defensive players. I know that they're great defensive players, but, I mean...
I think he's a second option for the Panthers. I really do. Number 8 makes a lot of sense with him. I mean, his workout almost aligns to Greg Olsen's. And at some point, they're going to have to look for a replacement for Greg Olsen. Let me wrap this in a package for you, Evan, how great this tight end class was. In the last 2 years, there were only 4 tight ends across like 150-something that tested over the 72nd percentile in terms of spark scores. In this class alone, there were 7, and probably even 8 when George Kittle goes through a whole workout. Like, that's double of what we've seen in the last 2 years combined. And those last 2 years were like no names. It was like Seth DeValve and Brian Parker. I mean, this year you have all the top ones with great skills. David Njoku, O.J. Howard, Evan Engram. I'm excited to watch more of Bucky Hodges and Jonnu Smith and some of these others. I will say that I know that there is some concern, or some are suggesting it, that Evan Engram now should surpass David Njoku, and I think those people are just looking at it from a 40-time perspective because Evan Engram ran a ridiculous 4.42, but both were in the 93rd percentile, same athleticism, and look, Evan Engram, sure, he might still go in the first round, top 50 picks or whatever, but every team isn't going to love him, in my opinion, as much as they love David Njoku, because Njoku is a plug-and-play inline tight end, whereas a lot of teams won't know how to use a player like Evan Engram.
I mean, Evan Engram is just a totally different player, so it's
exactly
than the other two, and it's just going to depend on what the team is looking for. I hope that the team that drafts Evan Engram has a plan for him and does not ask him to fill a traditional tight end role. I don't think he can block in the NFL. I don't think he's big enough, and I don't think he's good enough to do that. And I think that the way that you maximize Evan Engram is to use him as a receiver. 94th percentile spark athlete, 6'3", 234. You mentioned 4.42. Super productive in college. You know, liked pretty much everything that I saw from him. He's a natural hands catcher. Had some drops, but you know that's gonna happen. And I mean, he has a lot of confidence in his hands, and he's an incredible athlete. He's just very, very different, I think, as a player, especially from O.J. Howard.
Yeah.
But I think he's also very different from Njoku.
It's just crazy looking at these numbers. And again, we're looking at these on 3SigmaAthlete.com from Zach Wettman. And that's not even including really coveted tight end prospects like Jake Butt out of Michigan, like Jordan Leggett out of Clemson. And I really like Eric Saubert out of Drake. And I think Saubert's going to test like a great athlete. And then Adam Shaheen, who, I mean, is 6'6", 278 with athleticism, 72 percentile spark score. I think Daniel Jeremiah reported that he spoke with one team that said that he is the lockdown favorite to be the third tight end off the board coming out of Ashland.
Oh, wow.
Right? And maybe even a late first-round pick. Maybe not anymore. But that was pre-combine. That's nuts. That's amazing. And, I mean, not very often we see someone with his – athleticism at 6'6", 278, obviously. And it just goes to show that this tight end class, and Evan, a lot of people are going to say that, well, you can now wait until the fourth or the fifth round because these guys are going to drop. They're going to get pushed down because of how many there are. I disagree. I think just a lot of teams, and we're going to see it with the free agent money that these guys are getting paid, we're going to see these tight ends get taken early and often.
And also, tight end is a position where, and we've discussed this, players have a difficult time transitioning initially. We've also discussed how, I mean, I don't think that necessarily Njoku and O.J. Howard, especially O.J. Howard, will have a problem with this necessarily. But, you know, these tight ends from the smaller schools, the long, lanky, athletic tight ends, you know, they're going to have are you willing to invest high picks in these guys that are poor bets to be immediate contributors in the pros.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I hear you though, because they are, you know, it's a special group, and I'm with you. I'm excited to watch more of Bucky Hodges and Jordan Leggett. But it's still a dicey position, even though we love this class. It's still a dicey position because tight ends struggle to make initial, early career impacts. And are you willing to invest high picks that in players that aren't going to give you very much immediate return on value? I mean, the rookie contracts from the second round on are 4-year deals.
Yeah.
You know, are you willing to essentially concede a year? You know, this is like where Trent Baalke went wrong. He was willing to concede a year with all these players, and you know, he didn't take into account the mental and the physical aspects of, you know, these players getting drafted, getting big signing bonuses, and sitting out an entire season.
Right.
And you know, pretty much all those guys failed. They didn't have a single successful pick from all those redshirt guys.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's true. It's definitely true. This is complete tangent, but I'm amazed at how much the on-field portion of these drills are evaluated, especially at the quarterback spot, and we won't have to go into talk about quarterbacks now. But props to you all out there that can like sit from your television and see what you think is great or not and evaluate bad from good and say this guy did better than this or blah, blah, blah. I mean, I think coaches do that and they're great at it. I just do not feel comfortable with that at all. Like once these guys are done running and going through all these tests, Evan, I kind of just tune out because I pick up nothing from this on-field stuff unless it's maybe at the running back spot with his pass catching drills.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, do you feel like watching quarterbacks in that setting?
It makes no sense to me.
Is helpful,
man,
at all?
I mean, but just the conclusions that are drawn from it. Like, honestly, I want to completely dismiss all things that we see from the throwing sessions at the combine. And just like, and Justice Mosqueda brought up Johnny Manziel's pro day yesterday. Do you remember that, Evan? Like how much of a circus it was when he went out there in full pads and camo shorts? Like it was a Saturday Night Live skit. And just everyone went crazy for it. Like I am so over analyzing like the throws and the misses and what the footwork and all that stuff. When these guys are done playing without pressure, without five people rushing them, without four people rushing them, all that stuff. And I think that we see it from a microcosm at the combine, and just so many conclusions are drawn from it. But who knows? I mean, I
do think that they have not value. Value would not be the right word, but they have an impact.
Oh, because they definitely do.
Yeah, because again, you know, coaches are not, they don't have a lot of time to be studying all the players. They're doing pretty much what we're doing.
Yeah. They're going to draft breakdown. No, I'm kidding.
No, not going to draft breakdown, but you know, they're doing that in their own homes and they're at their own team headquarters, and they're, you know, in a lot of cases, like the first time that a coach will see a guy throw is at the combine. And what if he could look terrible at the combine, or he could look great, you know, and then that first impression, I think, can have an impact on the way that quarterback or that, you know, that coach feels about that quarterback going forward. I mean, that can color your analysis, your first impression. I mean, you know, when I was watching Leonard Fournette the first time, I thought he was terrible. And then I realized that he was injured,
right?
You know, and I think that that's just human error.
I've told you this story before, but in my cup of coffee with an NFL team when I spent a draft weekend with the team, their quarterback's coach or whoever it was said that he would take Blaine Gabbert over Cam Newton as the number one overall pick because of how much better Blaine Gabbert fared in Gruden's quarterback camp than Cam did. Like, these people are people.
They're people, right?
I mean, sure, they have much more experience than we do, but they get blinded and shaded and, change their opinion based on some really weird things. And rather than, you know, put these evaluations just because they come straight from the NFL on a pedestal, I think is wrong. And I could say that, and I have thousands of times. But, yeah, they're people like just we are. And just one more thing to end on. For a lot of these skill positions, maybe not wide receiver so much, but with running backs, more questions came out of it than answers. Not with Kamara, not with McCaffrey, but maybe with Fournette and especially with Dalvin Cook. And I'm just fascinated to see how that all plays out now with the questions that was brought up with Dalvin Cook. Meanwhile, we have Joe Mixon kind of looming there with this great pro day workout, obviously a talented film, and I don't think teams want to play against him. You know what I'm saying? So I'll be very interested to see how that dynamic changes throughout the next 50 days, I guess it is.
Yeah, were you able to pick up any, and I know that this is not down your alley, but I'm curious about it because I still read and hear murmurs that Joe Mixon, you know, that wasn't necessarily just a one-time incident, and people still, you know, beyond the one incident, there are other concerns about him just as a guy.
Well, who knows? I mean, there's nothing to pick up on yet because as we're recording this podcast, now he's talking to teams, you know? Yeah. It wasn't like at the comp. I know Dalvin Cook was grilled. 100% Dalvin Cook was grilled whenever he was brought in for those 15 minutes with teams, right? As with a ton of these other prospects, Malik McDowell, so on and so forth. But, I mean, Joe Mixon, that's a big part of it where he's not part of the conversation during Combine Week and because he wasn't there. Now, he might – I know all 32 teams are at his pro day. I think he's meeting with 20-plus of them. And so we'll hear more and more about it. But I do think, again, Evan, a big part of it is going to be GMs and coaches going to owners. And some teams he's just not going to happen for, right? Like the Panthers, it'll never happen. But a few of these other teams, they'll go to that decision maker, that head honcho, and say, look, this guy's supremely talented. We do not want to be playing against him on Sundays. Do you get my drift? We should have him on our team, and it'll be at a discount price in some scenarios. And sure, maybe that's cold. I'm just telling you how a lot of these football minds are going to think about this because he's a – I mean, he truly might be the top running back in this draft talent-wise. So – Getting that in the second or third round, I really do think he goes in that area, Evan. And I know like Tony Pauline still contends that he's not going to get drafted at all. I think second or third round is where he's going to get taken.
And Pauline knows what he's talking about.
Oh, he does. 100% he does. I just think that those conversations, like what, and I know I keep cutting you off, but we've seen it in the past with some of these situations. And I'm not going to say it's a similar one, but where – and you talked about at the top of this podcast – the scouts are information gatherers in a lot of situations and initial grades. A lot – I'm not going to say – I don't know a number of teams, but we're not going to have a determination on Dalvin, on Joe Mixon until those final 2 or 3 weeks, right? And the GM, the head coach, might have closed off meetings saying, look, if he's here, we're going to take him. And it only be between them because they don't want that information to get out, right? And at the end of the day – it really is a decision that's only up to the head coach, only up to the general manager, and up to the owner in a number of situations and doesn't involve the scouts or some of the other execs at all.
And I would say that the wild card in a lot of those situations is going to be the owner. Yep. I mean, you could get the coach on board with it and the GM on board with it, and the owner says, hell no.
Yep.
You know, I mean – how many owners do you think would even
– I have no idea.
Okay that?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
And because there's going to be the same number of media attention no matter where he's drafted. Like the press conference, especially the next day when he's announced with that jersey, when they bring the picks – when they bring the players in and all that kind of stuff, there's going to be a ton of media there. And, that's what's going to be in their mind just as much as the talent. And, again, that's going to be the same to me – if he's drafted in the second round versus if he's drafted in the sixth round. Now, maybe their wordage and their verbiage can be different if he's drafted in the fifth or sixth round. But again, I don't think he's going to get there. I really do think that he'll end up being a third round pick at the latest, maybe a fourth.
I would think so.
Evan, we could keep going. This has been really fun. Again, thank you all for checking it out. You can subscribe either on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you're listening to this. And as always, please rate and review. It helps us as we continue on through this off-season portion of this podcast to reach a new audience. Evan and I are going to be writing in a few weeks the team needs with some maybe draft projections that could fill those needs towards the later part of March and obviously all through April. We'll have mock drafts, all that kind of stuff. So thanks for checking it out. Evan, I'll talk to you next week, buddy.
Looking forward to it, man.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.